Author Rick Perlstein recently pointed out in an op-ed in The Times that when the 100th anniversary of Ronald Reagan's birth took place in January, the planet nearly stopped turning on its axis in celebration. When Hubert Humphrey's 100th was marked last month, there was barely a murmur. As mayor of Minneapolis in the 40s, Humphrey pushed for civil rights. As a congressman, he was so optimistic he was called the Happy Warrior. But then, as LBJ's VP, he was accused of selling out on Vietnam and carrying out Johnson's order that black activist Fannie Lou Hamer and others be banned from the 1964 Democratic Convention. So when Hubert Humphrey ran for president, liberals ran from him to Gene McCarthy and later George McGovern. It's a complicated legacy, and one place where it wasn't ignored recently was in Minnesota. The online publication MinnPost.com recently published a series on Hubert Humphrey. It was written by historian Eric Nathanson, who joins us now. Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
You call Hubert Humphrey Minnesota's leading 20th century political figure. But Rick Perlstein says he's also America's forgotten liberal. He says poor Humphrey could never catch a break. Explain that disconnect.
Well, here in Minnesota, Hubert Humphrey is not forgotten. Just about everybody of a certain age, maybe over 60, has a story to tell about Hubert. His energy, his enthusiasm, his capacity for remembering the name of every single person that he met. So Humphrey here in Minnesota had a huge presence, and we remember the contribution that he made on the national scene. You know, it's been over 30 years since Hubert departed, but I think in many ways his legacy lives on.
Well, let's flesh out that legacy a little more. As senator, he led the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to passage by skillfully winning over Republicans, and this was something that he came to early. As mayor, he created what was called the self-survey. You write about this. What was that?
Yes. Well, when Humphrey was elected mayor in 1945, Minneapolis had a reputation as a city that was rife with prejudice and discrimination. I think Humphrey, for the first time, really saw this as an issue that city government needed to deal with. So he early on tried to get a fair employment practices law adopted here in Minneapolis. He was rebuffed initially by the city council, so he went off to create a broad base of support. That was a self-survey. He had hundreds of volunteers surveying patterns of discrimination against minorities in Minneapolis. After several years, he was able to get a fair employment practices law adopted, one of the very early laws that any city in the country was able to put in place.
So how do we connect the dots from that man to the one who, as one of your readers wrote in a comment, literally distracted Fannie Lou Hamer and other black activists during the 1964 Democratic National Convention so that an all-white delegation from Mississippi could be sat instead of these activists?
Well, there was an effort to try to reach a compromise. The compromise which Humphrey helped to orchestrate was that the Mississippi Freedom Party would get two at-large seats at the convention, and that in the future the Democratic Party would adopt a strong civil rights equal opportunity position. Now, Fannie Lou Hamer was not satisfied with that proposal, but it did enable the convention to move on. Humphrey did become vice president, and Congress did adopt a very strong civil rights legislation.
Well, and this was seemed to be his thinking. I have to compromise. I have to make some tough decisions in order to get, you know, keep my eye on the prize, to borrow a phrase from the civil rights movement. But as you said, this is when Fannie Lou Hamer famously retorted, "We didn't come all this way for two seats." And she was one of the first to tell Humphrey to his face, "You've sold your soul." So did he sort of get caught in this trap of thinking you have to compromise to get the big prize at the end?
I think that's right. I think he did keep his eye on the prize, and the prize was the 1965 Voting Rights Act, which made a huge difference in this country. So obviously the Freedom Democratic Party folks were not happy in 1964, but we did see huge advances once the Johnson-Humphrey administration was in office.
But it wasn't just the Freedom Riders. Liberals and progressives in the party really turned on him for going along with LBJ's Vietnam policy. He might have won some things, like his party's nomination in 1968, but, you know, at what cost? He was increasingly disdained, I think is the word, by progressives. Again, is there something maybe he could have done differently?
You know, that's a difficult question. He was in a very tough spot in 1968. Some observers have said he should have resigned from the vice presidency and run on his own. That would probably have split the party. He would have incurred the wrath of Lyndon Johnson. I think he was hoping to sort of move away from the administration's war policy. He did that in a well-received speech in Salt Lake City in October of 1968, but it wasn't enough to satisfy the staunch anti-war activists within the Democratic Party.
What is your sense, then, of what Rick Perlstein says is the result? You know, he calls this a fork in the road for the Democratic Party. Once the mocking of Hubert Humphrey started, Hunter Thompson's Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail comes to mind. It depicts him, Humphrey, as sort of a sellout. He says the Democratic Party then turned away from Humphrey's kind of New Deal-inspired politics, helping the vulnerable, to more Watergate-inspired reforms. But those reforms all failed. I mean, deregulation took place, and now, Rick says, the Democratic Party is left without its main core values that someone like a Hubert Humphrey early on exemplified, and they're left with only talking about the economy.
Well, you know, the world has changed, but we certainly still do have the legacy of those early years. We have Medicare, which has made a huge difference in the lives of millions of Americans. I think the great tragedy of his career is that he was caught up in the war and he couldn't really extricate himself from his ties to Johnson and to Johnson's war policy. I think there's no question that if he had been elected president in 1968, we would have gotten out of Vietnam much quicker than in fact we did.
You say his legacy lives on. What about in Minnesota? You draw a line in your writing from Hubert Humphrey to Paul Wellstone. With Wellstone gone, who would you draw the line to now?
Well, we do have two very active, effective liberal senators, Amy Klobuchar and Al Franken. But we have a mixed politics, of course. We have folks on the other side of the political fence who are running for president.
You're talking about Tim Pawlenty and Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann has not announced yet, but you make the point that it's a state that can produce Michelle Bachmann and Hubert Humphrey.
Yes, that's right. We're a complicated state.
That's Eric Nathanson, the author of a series in the online publication MinnPost.com about Hubert Humphrey. Eric, thanks so much.
Thank you.